Today, we're going to talk about, among other things, workaholism. And as you know, I try to help people with about 30-some different behaviors that they're addicted to. And our guest today is Suzanne Falter. I just read Suzanne's new book. It's called The Extremely Busy Woman's Guide to Self-Care. And we are going to talk to her about her addiction to work. And she was once an extremely successful six-figure internet marketer. But her workaholic life came crashing down with the unexpected sudden death of her 22-year-old daughter, Teal. And for the next 2 years, she had a huge spiritual awakening, and out of that, a new mission was born, which started with a book and helping others really take care of themselves for balance, health, and happiness. And, of course, self-care and recovery is critical. Her book, again, The Extremely Busy Woman's Guide to Self-Care. Suzanne, it's nice to have you on the program today.
Hello, Wynn. So delighted to be with you.
Do you want to tell any more about the backstory?
Sure. I mean, for me, you know, as you said, I was a driven workaholic, and I think the really critical thing was that I had lost touch with my values. I'd forgotten what I really cared about in life, and my rush to make more money, have more success, be better known, be more this, be more that. I could never see myself as enough. And when my daughter passed away, she collapsed in a locked bathroom, and she was in her apartment. I just had dinner with her. She'd gone home. She was acting a little weird, and Teal had epilepsy, and very, very rarely, people with epilepsy will suddenly just have a massive cardiac arrest in a condition called sudden unexpected death in epilepsy, which is very poorly understood. And this is what happened to her. Maybe. We'll never really know for sure. But because of that, you know, I had this moment when I went into her hospital room where she was on all these monitors and, you know, life support and so forth. And I just looked at her and I had a profound moment of understanding that this was going to change my life, that she would die, and that my choice was to become a better person or go on as I had been. And I was not happy. I had changed my whole life dramatically, and I was off to a new start, except the new start wasn't going very well. I was about 2 years into it, and I'd ended a terrible relationship and lost the place I was living, and the business I had been so dedicated to, I had just closed it because I was so burned out. I couldn't even work because I was so burned out. And then there I was, suddenly a grieving mother. So I took that message, that spiritual awakening, very much to heart. And I realized my job was going to be to grieve this loss and change my life and make it into a life I could really be proud of and that she would have been proud of. Because she was very different. She was not a workaholic at all. She was a girl who packed up her little guitar on a whim and would go around the world busking and singing and playing her guitar in the streets for money. And she was very joyful and very compassionate. And she was very good at taking good care of herself. So I didn't know anything about that. And, you know, for many people, when self-care is like conjures up images of get the occasional massage and maybe a facial mask, you know. But so many women are extremely busy because they have not asked for enough support. They have believed they have to do it themselves. There are many, many little myths that they have put in place that have kept them locked into a life where they literally do not have time to think about themselves, how they're feeling, how they're doing, and what their needs are.
So, the title of your book is The Extremely Busy Woman's Guide to Self-Care. Do Do you have to be extremely busy in order to get value out of your book?
Oh, that's such a great question. Well, you know something? Busy is very much in the eyes of the beholder, right? So some people are so busy, I can't even imagine how they can keep their heads on straight. Other people don't seem so busy to me, but they feel busy. I think the key is extremely busy signals to people something is out of balance. If something is out of balance, something is out of whack, you know you need better self-care and you don't know how to get it. That's why I wrote this book, because that's where I was at. My whole life was this portrait of confusion. I thought that it was the goal to work all the time and produce. Then I come to find out that my life could be so much more beautiful and joyful and peaceful and serene and genuinely happy if I would let go of the need to control so many outcomes and the need to prove myself endlessly and the need to fix everybody else's problems. And if I could begin to focus on myself, not out of a selfishness, but simply out of a desire to become stronger and better able to be grounded and serve where I'm meant to serve and not serve where I'm not meant to serve.
Okay, one more question from your title before we go on.
Sure.
The Extremely Busy Woman's Guide to Self-Care. Do you have to be a woman?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, I have found a remarkable audience of men with this book. And, you know, I wrote it for women because I'm a woman, right? And I understand the women's perspective, but it's amazing how many men struggle with some of the same things. Boundaries, making requests, setting up, you know, getting clear on our needs. So many of us don't even know what we need half the time. You know, if you ask anybody on any given day, hey, what do you need right now? I mean, listeners might even want to try this. Ask yourself, what do I need right now? And if you come up with a blank to that question, you are very much not alone. It's kind of shocking how we don't even know our needs. And I say our world is busier and more intense and more highly stimulating than ever. And that's before the complications of a global pandemic. Before all this began, we were bombarded with information, and now we're being bombarded with information about our very survival. So what I would say is we need a rest. We need to go within. We need to calm down. We need to close our eyes and allow ourselves to focus on what we need right now.
Well, if you ask the population that question right now, I wouldn't be surprised if the most common answer would be, I need a job, I need income, I need food, and I don't need to be stuck in my house with nothing to do. I need to be out there and be busy. So it's going to give people, whether they like it or not, an opportunity to think about what would life be if you weren't extremely busy.
Well, and this brings us to the question of purpose,
right.
You know, because many of us are extremely busy doing something other than what we really love and care about. We're extremely busy. In my case, I was this dedicated internet marketer, but I didn't even allow myself to consider the fact that this really wasn't what I was supposed to be doing with my life. It was something I had some natural ability at, but I had other natural abilities as well that were very much neglected. And, you know, yes, there are matters of immediate survival on the table for many people, and they're looking for work, and they're grateful to find whatever they can get. And that is the moment we are in right now. But it doesn't mean that you can't hatch a plan to put something in place over the next 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever it will take to get you there, that really feeds your soul. Because here's the premise I really began all of this with. We're born perfect. We're aligned. We know who we are. We know what we need. We ask for what we want when we need it. There's no confusion. There's no obstruction to that. And then life and aging and all of the things happen that bring us to the point we're at now. And we begin to realize we haven't actually set up a life that was the life we always wanted to live. And you know, the Extremely Busy Woman's Guide is a book that has a lot of questionnaires and journaling exercises and prompts and things that help people get into the frame of mind of who am I and what do I really want and what would really serve me? Who do I need to ask for help? And how do I need to ask them? And what boundary is not being set here that needs to be put in place? You know, these are the little day-to-day interactions that help us get back to that grounded place where we are really living in full purpose.
Well, that's some really good questions that you have there. And I've been doing work with helping people get over their addictive behaviors for 35 years.
Right.
And one of the things that I have found is, and I defined addiction back 35 years ago as, if you have a behavior that you ultimately find out is hurting yourself some way or hurting someone you love and you can't stop it for whatever reason, you're addicted to that behavior. What would you say about that?
I would say that there's a whole piece of denial that goes along with that. I mean, for me, I have definitely dealt with some addictive behaviors in my life, and I know the biggest problem was acknowledging the reality of them. When Teal died, I had to get very real about my life very fast. I had been in an addictive relationship with a person who wasn't good for me, and that had just ended, but I had felt like such a victim. And then I realized, oh, wow, you know, I actually chose that relationship, and I hurt myself deeply by doing that. And when I finally allowed myself to just forgive that person and let go and walk away and move on, life began to open up to me again. Because when we are caught in these addictive behaviors, we're afraid to tell the truth that they're happening. And after Teely died, I actually went back and did a bunch of recovery work, which was part of my idea of becoming a better person. And all of it forced me to shine the light on the stuff I did not want to look at. And yet underneath of all of that was this fabulous reservoir of self-care where I learned how to really take good care of myself and how to be a stronger person and how to be able to give back to other people in a much more grounded and real way. And honestly, I can say now, oh gosh, what is it now, 8 years later, I am a much, much happier person. My life is so much better than it was before her death, even though, ironic as that may seem, of course I miss her all the time. But I am happy in a different way, and simply because the support I got doing that work helped me really tell the truth.
Well, the Bible says the truth shall make you free.
Yeah, there's some truth there, for sure.
That's the truth.
Amen.
Another one of my basic concepts is that all addictive behaviors are rooted in low self-esteem. You don't value yourself enough as a person. Mm-hmm. Would you say that that was your case also?
Well, I think so. And I love that that's your premise, because really, why else would we hurt ourselves? Why else would we do something that would hurt other people, which will ultimately hurt us as well? We are caught in behaviors that temporarily dull the pain of being these inadequate people, right? I mean, one of the things I learned in doing recovery work and doing all of the introspecting and the spiritual reckoning that I did after her death was that I learned I was enough. It was so shocking to me. I used to have a tape on all the time in my head that would correct me and say, no, 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 you shouldn't have done it that way. You should do it this way. What were you thinking? You're so stupid. On and on and on. And now the dramatic difference is I don't have that tape anymore. So when I make a mistake, I literally am able to just go, huh, that didn't work out like that. Okay, let's see what happens next. Life has become an experiment instead of a test, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And I love that because it's so freeing and it's so much more fun to make mistakes and be okay with it. And you learn so much. You learn so much.
Yeah, if you can,
I think,
if you can say I made a mistake and not self-criticize yourself and make yourself feel like that that you're no good, it's shameful, and all the kind of things that, that people with low self-esteem do. And you have a much better life, just like you said. And it's getting to that point that we would like everybody to get to. So,
Well, or even if, I mean, look, I really respect people need to be exactly where they're at. There are plenty of people who will never pick up my book, could use a good shot of self-care, and I'm at peace with that because I do know that I'm not meant to help anybody other than the people that are meant to find my message and be helped by it. And that takes a whole lot of pressure off of me as well, because back when I thought I had to save everybody, gosh, my life was complicated and difficult, and I had to work all the time. Not so anymore, Wynn.
Albert Einstein said the difference between stupidity and genius is that genius has its limits. And so I read somebody the other day and said, where do you find stupid people? And well, you find stupid people that can't count to 10. And where do you find those? You find those in the checkout express line at the grocery store. So, having said that, which doesn't really add to our conversation too much, but I thought it was funny, I will go on and ask you about 8 myths that rule overworked lives. Could you list those for me?
8 myths that rule overworked lives. Well, let's see. The 8 myths of overworked lives, I would certainly say the first one is believing you have to do it all yourself. You have to take that belief that whatever you are doing, it isn't enough. Nobody can ever substitute for you, but you're going to try to do your best. It's this weird phenomenon where you are kind of an insignificant failure, but you are the center of the universe. If that makes sense. I mean, another myth about overwork is that doing more will get you great results. You know, believing that more work is better than less work. Like, as long as I keep going and spewing out something, it'll be okay, whatever it is. You know, that one really drove me. I'd say another one is you can never, ever, ever ask for help. Just like you can't trust people, and number one, number three would be, you cannot ask for help under any circumstances because then you're going to seem weak. And if you seem weak, well, then we're all in trouble. Now, I also like this one about just fine isn't good enough. Now, if you're a workaholic, you're never satisfied with your output, right? that's a belief that I have to keep going and make it a little better. But just fine is just fine. It's like an average output, which is what many other people are perfectly successful with, that's going to be good enough. We never believe that, but when you can allow yourself to believe that just fine is good enough, oh, things really, really relax. You know, I'd say another one is, I can't say no. Everybody expects me to say yes. And I don't want to disappoint anyone. You know, it's this belief that we have to be the last person to leave the office. We have to do that final load of laundry after the entire family has gone to bed. Wherever we find ourselves, we can't stop because people expect us to always say yes, of course. And we're also the ones who are endlessly volunteering all the time because nobody else will step up. And that's a tricky thing, because if you can get yourself to not volunteer for something and you just stay quiet, you may be there for an uncomfortable several minutes in a meeting, and then suddenly somebody unexpected will say, I'll do it. And the beautiful thing is, they just got a chance to participate that had been taken away from them by the people who have to do all the volunteering all the time. You know, I think a lot of this is about being willing to identify what your needs are and then making requests around those needs and setting boundaries about those needs. It all kind of boils down to the same thing, whether we're talking about workaholism or even just finding your purpose in life, you know?
Right. Well, they can get more information about Miss and in your book, The Extremely Busy Woman's Guide to Self-Care. I'm going to ask you, how do you define self-care?
Well, I define self-care as returning to the self. It's of tuning into yourself, really listening to yourself, and understanding what these beautiful thoughts and wants and needs are that fill your heart, and then allowing yourself to put those in place in your life, no matter how unlikely and impossible it seems, because a no might need to be said where you previously said yes, or you might need to change some things. Change is good because it gets us back to a place where we can really honor ourselves and our needs, and we can fulfill them.
Well, we're in the middle of a pandemic, as you pointed out, and I'm wondering, is self-care different in the middle of this pandemic?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. I have been doing some writing about that. And, you know, honestly, where my mind goes with this is the time to regroup, to push the reset button. Many of us are sheltering, most of everybody in the U.S. at least is sheltering at home. We're needing to be at home. Some of us are at home with small children and full-time jobs that we're trying to do. This is, first of all, really the time to relax the standards and allow yourself to be imperfect and not be the perfect mom and not be the perfect employee. That's the very first thing to do. The next thing to do is to create some alone time. And sometimes for us, especially I'm thinking of my friends in New York who live in small apartments or anywhere really where it's rather crowded, and you might even have an elder living with you who you needed to bring home to be safe from assisted living. Well, if there's a little crowd in your house, you got to find some alone time. And the alone time may only be accomplished by going into the bathroom, shutting the door, lighting a candle, drawing a bath, and giving yourself a good half hour to an hour of just relaxing. And the people around you, it's a real opportunity to set some limits and say, I'm going to do this now. I need this. It's an opportunity to really talk to people who you may in fact be married to, about what's not working and what is working. It's an opportunity to be supportive. It's an opportunity to be supported. It's an opportunity to ask for the things you need and to get in touch with them. You know, it's sort of like everything was taken away overnight, or as a good friend of mine said, Mother Nature has sent us to our rooms, you know, and literally, and here we are, we're just going to settle down and think for a while. And my dream is that women who are extremely busy are going to use this time to regroup and think about their needs and allow themselves to just go within a little bit, wherever they're at, and use this as an opportunity to emerge in a different, more empowered way.
I was thinking in the 30 different kinds of addictions that I'd try to help people with, one of them is negative thinking, and under negative thinking comes the term perfectionist. Were you mm-hmm. a perfectionist, and how does that relate
oh, yeah.
to being overworked and addicted to work?
Well, I have been a perfectionist, and my perfectionism was very much about never being satisfied. It was what we were talking about earlier, that low self-esteem, you know, because when you're a perfectionist, everything seems not quite good enough. And the other thing I believed was that if I worked hard enough, I'd be somebody someday. And now I'm just laughing at it because it's so untrue. It's such a myth. The idea that I'm not already inherently valuable and worth being on this planet and taking up space and contributing to people, and that I'm not already a special person. In fact, we're all special people when we own it. But so many of us don't have that opportunity, you know. Something dramatic doesn't happen, and they never get a chance to claim who they are.
So I'll relate this personally. People have asked me, don't you want to be a celebrity? Don't you want everybody to know your name? And I said, well, I might have had those kind of thoughts back 20, 30, 40 years ago when I was getting started. But I've kind of grown up since then, and I realize that that is never going to bring anybody happiness.
Mm.
You have to do things because you want to do them to help other people. And whether you make a good income or a lousy income or 10 people know you or 100,000 people, all that is not as important as having the internal feeling that your life is helping other people. And you people do it the different ways. I try to help people get out of their addictions, but some people have things that don't sound so monumentous, but they're just as important. And if I could help people understand that, I think that that would be a good contribution to the world.
Well, and I think what I'm really hearing from what you're saying is you understand you're living your sole purpose.
Right.
That's all that really matters in the end. Are we fulfilling our karmic destiny? You know, what some religions would call karma and others would call purpose.
Yep.
It's like, are we fulfilling the need that we are here to serve? And you know, doing this work feels like it is fulfilling my need, as opposed to teaching people how to get known on the internet.
Right.
That you know, taught me some interesting things about technology. I learned a lot about that. But and I made some great money doing that, and I even helped some people with their businesses. But I knew in my heart that it was empty work for me, that it was not what I was meant to be doing. And we know down to our toes. We just have to tell the truth about it.
Oh, I was thinking, if you would ask yourself the question, what would I be doing if I wasn't going to get paid for it? What am I so passionate about that I would do it even if I wasn't getting paid for it? And if you'll ask yourself that question and meditate on the answer, it'll come to you. And that's what you should be doing. Because if you need money, money will come to you. So that's not the important criteria for your job.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think that's really true. And the whole idea of meditating on something, that's another thing extremely busy women don't usually have time to do. How are we supposed to meditate when we've got 15 balls in the air that we're juggling all the time, and we feel guilty taking 10 minutes for ourselves? But this is why I had to write this book, because there is time to meditate. There is time to slow down. There is time to ask for help. We have to simply put ourselves out in the world in a different way. And the feedback I'm getting from my readers is that this is really true, that there is a real need for this book. There's a need for people in general to just slow down and forgive themselves. And perhaps that's part of the larger purpose of this coronavirus and this pandemic we're experiencing. The idea that everybody at once would go inside and shut the door and just stay home, that's extraordinary. That's world-changing. And when we emerge from it, I'm going to be so interested to know how people feel about their lives and their level of gratitude and their awareness of each other. What an incredible experience between generations as I see all these younger people going out to buy groceries for their neighbors. You know, that really wasn't happening around here in Oakland, California before this happened. I mean, it was, you know, we all know our neighbors. You know, you get a nice nod on the street, but would you actually show up and do something like this for them? Heck no. But that's happening now all over the place, and it's all over the U.S., and I'm so impressed. I think it's just wonderful.
Well, you have a lot of great things for people to learn if they will get your book and read it. And one of the things that you've talked about in your book is self-care essentials, and you talked about
yes.
10 different essentials to self-care. Now, I have been interviewing people with respect to corona and with respect to personal physical problems, chronic pain and everything. And I want you to talk about your number one essential, which is absolutely necessary in order to get well from a disease or to have the best life that you can have, and that is a good night's sleep. And
yes, it is, Wynn.
Now,
that's right.
I can, if you can't remember, and I can't remember half the stuff in my book, but if you can't remember.
Oh, I can. I got it right in front of me. I'm all ready for you.
All right. Well, we'll start with it and give us the bullet points and give us a sentence or two about.
I would be happy to. And I think at this particular moment during the pandemic, one of the things that's really keeping people awake is worry and anxiety. And I've had a little of that. Surprisingly not, though, because I got into a habit some time ago of sitting at the kitchen table or someplace other than where I sleep and making lists of things I was worried about, getting them out of my head and into a notebook. You know, and I go through my life with a big spiral notebook and I write down all kinds of stuff. Could be a phone, a dock on the phone or the laptop, whatever, iPad, you know, it doesn't really matter. But get these worries out of your head at least 2 hours before you go to bed. It could be any time during the day, but just in a place and a time other than bedtime. And the second piece of this is to get out the door and get some exercise every day. And I know the CDC is saying this, and so are many, many sources. But there's a reason for this, which is that you get the endorphins going in your body from, you know, movement, sustaining an elevated heartbeat. And those endorphins are going to make you feel better. They're going to calm you down. The other thing I really love related to sleep is getting a yoga practice going. And, you know, I had done yoga every week for more than 30 years. And when I moved to Oakland about 5 years ago, I stopped doing it. And I couldn't imagine why. I just wasn't finding a yoga class I liked. And then, lo and behold, in the pandemic, in comes my all-time favorite yoga instructor, who's so beautiful and does this beautiful slow-moving yoga. And I got myself on her class, and now I'm doing yoga twice a week, and it's really helping my sleep. Other things people can do, of course, avoiding caffeine even in the morning. You know, there's this belief that you can have a little cup of coffee or some tea first thing, and it won't bother your sleep that night. But if you are having insomnia, in fact, that means your system is hypersensitive to the caffeine, and you need to replace it with something else because your whole central nervous system will relax if you do that. Similarly, avoiding sugar and carbs at night, save them for lunchtime, but don't eat them for dinner. You can, women who are over 35, I'd say, are going to be more inclined to wake up sweaty and disturbed in their sleep from eating sugar at night. Regulating your sleep hours is great. Now, there's a really good book I loved called Say Goodnight to Insomnia by Greg D. Jacobs, who's a doctor. And he wrote all about the cognitive behavioral therapy approach to regulating your sleep. And if you really have chronic insomnia, and I did for 5 years, this was one of my key tools for turning it around, something called sleep regulation, where you document your sleep, and you make sure you know that you're going to bed around the same time every night and you're waking up at the same time. Just getting on a schedule. And you can use apps for this. You know, the bedtime app, if you're on iOS and an iPhone, I think Android probably has something similar, where you're just gently reminded by your phone to go to sleep and wake up at the same time. I also like avoiding screens right before bedtime. I just think about 90 minutes prior to bedtime, I have to get off the screens. Similarly with the news exposure. Right now, the news is scary. It really is. And it can't help but be scary because these are scary times. But taking that news away, taking screens away, taking that stimulus away within about a two-hour zone around bed, it just really helps. You might even try meditating a little before you go to bed, just sitting in seated meditation and allowing that just to pass through you, just allowing that calming, stilling voice. And if you've never meditated, there are some terrific apps on the smartphone, including Insight Timer and Calm, which guide you through meditation. There are many, many apps, of course, and you can find them anywhere. I also like a practice called Yoga Nidra, in which recordings of Yoga Nidra teachers lead you through a whole sequence of relaxing every little part of your body and being able to lie there and calm your beating heart and calm your anxiety is such a good thing to learn. It really does help you push the reset button and go right back to zero. And I have woken up so many mornings after having an anxious night, remembering the last thought in my mind was that I was relaxing my jaw and then my neck and then my shoulders, and suddenly it's morning. It's so great. These are just some of the things you can do, but I love sleep tracking apps as well, and keeping a sleep log. Gosh, I could go on and on. Here's my last pro tip. If you really can't sleep and you turn on the light and you read something that will put you to sleep. Don't read the juicy novel you're in the middle of, because you'll stay up for another hour and a half. My former husband used to say, read Ralph Waldo Emerson. And you know, I've got to say, Emerson, beautiful, brilliant writer of the 19th century, had a certain kind of energy to his writing, which in the middle of the night, it really does put you to sleep.
Well, those are some really good tips, and you can get Suzanne's book, The Extremely Busy Woman's Guide to Self-Care, and go into them at your leisure and see what the resources are. But I think that if you had one thing to deal with, I would recommend deal with sleep, because that's the basic underlying restorative time in your life. And it happens every day, and if you want to be restored, find out how to get it. There were a couple things that I had thought about as we were talking, and I've interviewed a surgeon. His name is David Hanscom, and his book tells about getting unnecessary back surgery. He was an operating surgeon. And back pain is one of the most common things that brings people to the doctor's office. And chronic back pain is everywhere. Everybody has chronic back pain. At any rate, I wanted to tell you that, and this kind of blends in with some of the things that you said, but he's got a non-pharmaceutical approach to getting rid of chronic pain, even if it's severe. And even if you've had it for 15 years. And that's called expressive writing. And he asks you to do that twice a day, morning and just before bedtime, and take 10 or 15 minutes and write out by hand whatever is going through your mind at the time, the good, the bad, the ugly. And then tear it up and do it again. And it might not happen in 10 minutes or even a day or two, but you can do it until your pain goes away. And he says that he's seen 1,000 articles attesting to the scientific fact that this works. So if you've got pain and you don't know what to do about it and you've tried everything, try expressive writing. And you were talking about journaling, and that's a variant of that. And so I just wanted to bring that up.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. That's from a doctor, for Pete's sakes. There's your proof right there.
Yeah, he gave up probably several $100,000 a year operating on people's backs that didn't need to be, and quit so that he could give them something that really would help their back. Yeah. At any rate, you can go to my podcast and see his program. Well, hear his program. And that link would be www.freedomfromaddiction.libsyn.com. Libsyn is spelled L-I-B-S-Y-N. And it's one of my distributors, and it'll take you right to the most recent podcast. And if you go there this afternoon or tomorrow, it'll take you to your podcast.
Oh, great.
And so anybody can get all this free, great information like you've been giving us today, and it'll change your life if you'll go and listen to it. Let's see, what else? Oh, anxiety. You said you've even had some anxiety. Well, I imagine that anxiety is one of the largest things that has come out of having this pandemic. Everybody's about something or the other. But I had another guest, and her name is Catherine Kerrigan, and you can hear her program on there too. And she talks about how to get rid of at least 50% of your anxiety through 8 simple breathing exercises. Do each of them 1 minute, that's 8 minutes out of your day, and cut your anxiety and worry and that in half. And if you take her advice and do that, you will have a better time getting through this coronavirus. And like I said,
isn't it interesting that these are tools that are innate in the body? You know, breathing, journaling, meditating, tuning within. We're all basically sharing the same direction, which is to go within and tune into the wisdom of the body. And, you know, my daughter really understood that. When she died, she left behind a journal that was filled with little squibs and thoughts, you know, healing thoughts. And I remember her saying, writing one of the things, it was, how do I get in touch with my body? Turn off your brain and ask. And I loved that because she was trying to get back to her innate wisdom. And she had learned that if she lay down on her bed or sat in a chair and put her heart on her hand on her chest or on her belly, she just asked, she would understand what her body needed. And, you know, that was that simple wisdom that just really serves us. But we simply have to allow ourselves to ask the question in the first place.
Well, practically any question can be asked and you can get a satisfactory answer by going inward and letting your thoughts bring to you the answer. I mean, it's even better than Google. And
and ad-free, I might note.
And ad-free. Well, Suzanne, this was a delight getting to talk to you about your book, The Extremely Busy Woman's Guide to Self-Care. It's one of the better programs that I've done because there's a lot of content in here that will really help you. And I'm wondering if you would tell my audience how to get a copy and about your website and that kind of stuff.
Sure. The Extremely Busy Woman's Guide to Self-Care is available at Amazon and barnesandnoble.com and anywhere books are sold in ebook, audiobook, and paperback. I also have a podcast called Self-Care for Extremely Busy Women and a Facebook group that's free that any busy woman can ask to join and be let right in called the Self-Care Group for Extremely Busy Women. And I also have a little gift for people listening to this show. If you come by my website at suzannefalter.com, S-U-Z-A-N-N-E-F, like Frank, A-L-T, like Tom, E-R.com, / sneaky myths, sneaky myths. I've got a document there you can have as a gift, 10 sneaky myths that kill self-care and the enlightening truths that revive it. So you can see where you're at with your own self-care. SuzanneFalter.com/ sneaky myths.
That's great.
That's what I got to share.
That's really a nice gift that you're going to give all the people that are listening today. And I've read it, and it's worth doing. So I would suggest that you go over there and get the sneaky myths. And I just want to say that I know that this is your mission in life now, and I also know that probably you can say and give a testimonial to the fact that because this is your mission now, your life has improved dramatically from the time before you had this mission. Is that true?
Absolutely. In all ways imaginable. I remarried. I have a great relationship. I live in a beautiful place. I love my city. I'm doing work every day. that is aligned with my purpose. I'm surrounded by loving friends, and I couldn't be happier, really. That is absolutely true. And thank you for saying so.
Another resource would be my website. If you have anything that you're addicted to, and it could be common things or it could be extremely uncommon things, but if something isn't working in your life, you need to go over to that website, and it'll also give you some advice on purpose in life, because having a purpose in life and doing it is one of the most important things to get rid of the things that are making you unhappy in life. And that is www.freedomfromaddiction.com. Okay, so we've covered the waterfront, and do you have anything else you'd like to tell my audience before we stop for the day?
Just keep on breathing, folks. The future is bright.
Isn't that the truth? And you have two ways of responding to the crisis that we're in, and one of them is that you could change the way you think about things. And if you do that, no matter how you suffered, you're going to have a better life. So that's what I would recommend. Take that
approach. I love it. That's great.
Okay, Suzanne. Talk to you next time.
Thank you so much, Wynn. It was a delight to speak to you.